Welcome to North Square Investments Active Insights Podcast. North Square Investments is dedicated to bringing differentiated active investment strategies to financial advisors and investors through our multi-boutique asset management platform. Today, Mark Goodwin, Chief Executive Officer of North Square Investments, and Kristen Van Gelder, Partner and Deputy Chief Investment Officer with Evanston Capital, will discuss alternative investment strategies and Evanston's experience in identifying and accessing leading hedge fund managers to build diversified alternatives portfolios. Evanston Capital is on the North Square platform and is sub-advisor for the North Square Evanston Multi-Alpha Fund. Mark and Kristen, we look forward to your discussion.
Thanks, Diane. As you mentioned, at North Square, we seek out best-in-class active managers for our platform. And our partners at Evanston Capital provide differentiated access to a portfolio of managed alternative strategies. Kristen, Evanston has managed portfolios of alternative strategies for over 20 years, primarily for institutional and high net worth investors. So some financial advisors and individual investors may not be familiar with the firm. Can you give us some background on the firm and your core investment philosophy?
Absolutely. And thank you so much, Mark, for having me here today. So Evanston Capital was founded in 2002. We trace our roots to the endowment world. One of our founding partners was the former chief investment officer of Northwestern University. So the vision was really to bring an endowment-like approach to investing in alternatives and institutional quality portfolios to investors that might not have the scale, time, or resources to build their own direct portfolios in that portion of the market. Today, we manage over $4 billion in multi-manager portfolios, predominantly in hedge funds, and we are a fully independent and employee-owned firm. We have been at this a long time, over 20 years, as you mentioned, but I would say, you know, our core investment philosophy has really remained steadfast throughout that time. So first and foremost, we approach investing in hedge funds with a healthy dose of skepticism. We think that markets are generally efficient, investment skill is scarce, and the average hedge fund adds no value on a net of fees basis. So we think selectivity is really key to results within hedge funds. Second, we are firm believers in the life cycle of a hedge fund. So we think we can add value by identifying talent early and investing when managers are smaller and hungrier, when they have a lot of investment flexibility, and when our incentives are highly aligned around performance. And I'd say there's also an added benefit of investing early in that we can often negotiate preferred fees and terms on behalf of our investors. And then last, I would say, you know, if we think that there's truly a limited number of top-tier hedge fund managers out there, it would stand to reason that we build relatively concentrated portfolios. So the multi-alpha fund is typically 20 to 25 managers. And when we bring a new idea to the table, the first question that's asked is, which manager would you fire or what investment would you fully exit in order to pursue that idea? So I think that's just been a great discipline for our team. It's kept the bar really high, the standards really high for making a new investment. And it's kind of encouraged this sort of constant competition for capital within our portfolios.
Kristen, as you develop your asset allocation for the portfolio, are there core investment strategies that you build around, and how are those strategies complementary?
Yeah, I mean, the hedge fund universe is pretty diverse, but we divide it into sort of four strategy categories: long short equity, event driven, global macro, and relative value. So long short equity, just as it sounds, you know, these are stock selection strategies where managers are buying stocks that they think should go up in value over time. And likewise, short selling stocks that they think should decline in value over time. And managers operate with varying degrees of net market exposure based on their own, you know, individual styles. Event-driven strategies, they really span both equity and credit markets. But the commonality there is that they're trying to capitalize upon some corporate transformation or corporate event. So these are big, hard catalysts, typically like merger and acquisition activity, spinoffs, recapitalizations or refinancings, bankruptcies, and restructurings. Global macro, these are strategies that are focused on forecasting macroeconomic outcomes, so things like growth, inflation, monetary policy, and then managers express those views globally across asset classes, including equities, fixed income, currencies, and commodities. And then lastly, relative value. These strategies are generally designed to capture mispricings between two related or highly correlated securities. So for example, playing two different parts of the capital structure of the same company. So trading debt versus equity, or trading the securities of two different companies, but that operate within the same industry or that are close peers to one another. So we have strategic asset allocation ranges that we typically operate within across those four buckets that I would say has served us really well over 20 plus years and in very different market environments over time. But where we are within those historical allocations definitely evolves given, first our bottom-up assessment and confidence in our individual managers, but then also given our top-down views on the market environment and the opportunities for different hedge fund strategies. I would also say long-short equity and event-driven, those strategies typically do have some directional exposure and modest correlation to markets over time, while relative value and global macro, those tend to be more defensive strategies, tend to be negatively correlated or even uncorrelated to markets and other hedge fund strategies. So having all four together in one portfolio gives us some nice balance.
Thanks for that. Are you finding any differentiated or innovative strategies that may be less well known but warrant a modest allocation in the portfolio?
Yeah, we do have some exposure today to the carbon markets, specifically California carbon allowances. So that's not really, a strategy per se, but it is certainly a niche market. There's government mandated limits on the participation from financial speculators in the physical allowances, but there is also an active and pretty liquid futures and options market in California carbon allowances. So we believe it's still a niche space. We see some potential changes to the state's cap and trade program that could further restrict supply of allowances in the future. And we think that could be, a positive catalyst. So we do have some exposure, modest exposure to that through one of our existing managers today.
That's great. Well, what would cause significant shifts in your asset allocation, either among the broad categories or within them?
Yeah, historically, the biggest shifts to our asset allocation really tends to be tied to the credit cycle. So when credit spreads are wide, yields are high, and defaults are prevalent, you will see us lean into those opportunities by increasing our allocation to event-driven strategies. And that would be primarily credit-oriented event managers. So those that have expertise in stressed and distressed debt, for example. And likewise, the reverse is true. When credit spreads are tight, yields are relatively low, there are very little in the way of default activity, we will lean away from the event-driven allocation. So that's probably the biggest, shifts that tend to occur in our asset allocation really tied to the credit cycle.
Kristen, evaluating managers across sophisticated investment strategies requires specialized experience and a disciplined due diligence process. Two-part question for you. A, how do you work through the universe of hedge fund managers to identify those to consider for more detailed due diligence? And second, what is the decision process for a manager to ultimately be allocated assets in your portfolio?
Yeah, it's a big universe, but we do try to cast a wide net. We want to give full consideration to managers of all shapes and sizes, different strategies, different stages in their life cycle. We meet with hundreds of managers every year, and we make on average 3 to 5 new investments. So it's sort of turning over a lot of rocks to find, a very small handful of gems. What are we doing to kind of filter down that universe? We're really focusing on, I'd say several factors. Manager pedigree, so their experience and the applicability of that experience to the strategy that they're now pursuing. Their articulated economic edge and the process that would lead us to believe that's repeatable over time, their portfolio construction and trading acumen, their risk management discipline. And then we're thinking about, how diversifying or what kind of correlation characteristics that strategy would offer relative to other investments that we have. I'd say there's some general preferences we've developed after doing this for a couple decades and some real patterns that we look for. As I said before, we definitely believe in investing early. So having a rich pipeline of new launches has always been important to us. We look for managers that have some degree of specialization, so something that really narrows their investment universe, or where they've developed a real specific skill set. We also look for managers that can add value from trade structuring, position sizing, exposure management. I think, you know, there's a much larger universe of managers out there that can add some value from security selection, but those that actually can also add value from the way they put together a portfolio, you end up with a much smaller number. So, you know, we really look for that. And then, you know, we look for some softer things, like just a true passion for investing. We want to see that a manager is somewhat addicted to doing this and would do it no matter what, isn't just driven by the financial benefits of success, but that they love investing. And then there's also, likewise, there's some things that we avoid. We avoid strategies that are opaque or that we can't really fully understand. We definitely also avoid strategies that rely upon very high degrees of financial leverage to generate optically attractive returns, and worse yet, strategies that combine both illiquidity and high degrees of leverage, which can be, you know, a dangerous combination. So, you know, when we're going through the process, I mean, it's a multi-step process for us. You know, investment due diligence is at the front end. So we really want to, you know, thoroughly vet the investment equation first and foremost. There's quantitative elements to that process. You know, we're analyzing any prior data that we can get our hands on, track record, prior examples of prior investment successes and failures. We're comparing them to, you know, high quality group of their peers. But then there's also a lot of judgment that goes into that process. And, you know, I think in that we're really aided by, you know, our team's deep experience and, you know, networks within this space. We can talk to a lot of other hedge fund managers and investors to vet a manager's prior experiences. And then, you know, once we're fully convinced on the investment side of the equation, we have a separate team that focuses more on operational due diligence. So there's, you know, definitely clinical elements to that process, you know, making sure the manager has the right checks and balances, works with high quality service providers, et cetera. But there's also some real, you know, soft considerations that we give close attention to. So just trying to understand the firm's character and culture, you know, the degree of transparency that they give to us. We want to get a sense that, you know, these are really good business partners and that they would treat their investors fairly, both in good times and in bad. So there are senior members from both the investment team and the operational due diligence team that are represented on our investment committee. And that committee meets together on a monthly basis. That's where all of our investment decisions are formally ratified. And we require unanimous approval to actually move forward with a new investment and allocate assets to a manager. And I think, you know, it's pretty special because, you know, our investment team, we have a lot of experience. We have on average over 20 years of experience, but we've also been working together on average over 16 years. So there's both that knowledge base as well as just the stability of working together. I think that, you know, really aids in this process.
Kristen, that's an awesome background. Can you talk about access for a minute? And I know that skilled hedge fund managers can often be difficult for the average investor to gain access to. Has this created any issues for Evanston? And how have you been successful in accessing investments with these managers that you believe are best in class for your portfolio?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, some of the best and the best managers, right, they eventually close to new capital, and it can be difficult for, you know, the average investor to gain access. So that's, it's important for us to make sure that Evanston has a great reputation. And I think that we do have that. So there are cases, of course, where managers are close to new capital and we would love to access them. And in those instances, we just focus on building a relationship with the manager, making sure they really understand who we are as an investor and our investment philosophy, hoping that in the instance where they do reopen or, you know, they have redemptions that they want to replace, we would be sort of at the top of that list. And then, you know, investing early is important because, you know, we can gain, in some instances, you know, we can negotiate capacity agreements, but then you also sort of have this goodwill with the manager as, you know, you've been one of the few investors that kind of helped them get into business. So down the line, they'll remember you as an important partner and, you know, maybe you would be the first call in many instances if they were to reopen to a limited amount of capacity. And then I think on top of that, I would just say that Evanston, I think we're kind of at a sweet size in terms of our asset base at a little over $4 billion. You know, even relatively small managers can be meaningfully sized positions in our portfolios and matter to performance. We don't need to deploy, you know, $500 million, $1 billion to a single manager for them to move the needle. So it's really all those factors combined, I think, that has led to success for us when it comes to access.
Kristen, I know you have a robust monitoring process for your managers. Can you talk about what issues or changes among them would result in you replacing a manager or substantially lowering an allocation within the fund?
Yeah, you know, there's lots of reasons why we would exit or reduce the position size. I think the most common is probably strategy drift. So when you see a manager start to broaden out from their core competencies or the characteristics of their portfolio really start to change. And I'd say most often that is tied to growth that goes beyond the manager's likely capacity or growing just far too fast. So we're highly attuned to both of those things when it comes to monitoring our managers. But, you know, there's other common factors too, you know, sustained subpar performance, either relative to what we view as their market opportunity set or relative to peers, you know, significant organizational change, both incoming and outgoing. And then a little bit softer, but I'd say, you know, kind of any breach in our confidence of them as a true business partner. So maybe, you know, becoming less transparent or, you know, certainly any, you know, material adverse change in their fees and terms, that would definitely lead to, you know, potential reason to exit. And, you know, I would just say, you know, like there's thousands of hedge fund managers out there. We're investing in 20 to 25. Like our view is that when the facts change, we are not afraid to move our feet. So this is a very actively managed portfolio, typically has, you know, 15 to 20% turnover per year.
That's great. Kristen, going macro for a minute, the Fed has been holding rates at current levels. Inflation has seemingly improved recently, but remains a concern. Economic growth has been resilient, but deficits are challenging. We have also have significant geopolitical tensions, and U.S. federal elections are coming in November that could potentially impact markets. Another two-part question for you. You know, first, where do you see investment markets currently, and what's the outlook for the rest of the year? And following on that, what's your positioning of the portfolio, given your thoughts on the broader market?
Yeah, Mark, I couldn't agree with you more. There are just so many cross currents to consider today. You know, I look at markets, we have high interest rate volatility, relatively high equity valuations in the US, high yield credit spreads that are nearing historical tights, and then just all of this uncertainty, as you mentioned. I think that it's precisely these types of environments where, you know, risk assets are, you know, relatively richly priced and you don't really know what will happen in terms of monetary policy or some of these geopolitical concerns. It's like, it's precisely these types of markets where the flexibility of the hedge fund model can be most valuable. You know, our high level view is that the Fed is likely to remain patient. Maybe we do see them start to ease towards the end of the year, but, you know, inflation remains a concern, as you say, and you know, so far the economy has remained, you know, really resilient. So I think that, you know, higher interest rates are a tailwind for hedge funds that really has not existed for the better part of the last decade. And that's for several reasons. You know, managers are earning higher rebates on the collateral that they post for short positions. They're earning higher interest on their unencumbered cash when they're investing on margin through futures or when they're using other derivatives like options to express their investment views, and they're earning higher yields on credit-oriented strategies. Plus, there's these second-order effects of higher interest rates, which, you know, you see both higher market volatility, which we have had in the past couple of years, and the potential for higher dispersion between individual securities. Like when there is a real cost of capital, again, there is more differentiation between businesses of different qualities. Both of those, higher volatility and higher dispersion, have generally been precursors for better results from hedge funds, broadly speaking. So we're super excited about just sort of this general picture. But then looking deeper, kind of peeling back the onion, we see a bunch of very specific opportunities across hedge fund strategies today. So one area we're really excited is fundamental long-short equity. I see far less competition for stock selection strategies with a multi-year horizon today than I've seen in years. So we all know about the trend toward passive investing in the long-only world. But even within active management, we've seen allocations become more and more barbelled, with a lot of capital flowing into very short-term trading-oriented strategies at one end, and similarly, a lot of capital tied up in ultra-long-duration private equity venture capital at the other. Meanwhile, there has actually been outflows from fundamental long-short equity, which sits in the middle. So we think if you can find real skilled stock pickers, especially those with real skill on the short side, they've got an incredible opportunity with far less competition today. Within credit, we think that, you know, if rates remain relatively high for a longer period of time, you know, that is eventually going to cause some problems for certain leveraged borrowers as maturities start to near and the prospect of refinancing at much higher costs of capital becomes a reality. So within that theme, we're most interested in leveraged loans. You know, it's floating rate instruments. These borrowers are already starting to feel the pinch from higher interest expense. And there's both a higher volume of loans coming due in the next couple years, as well as, you know, a higher proportion of that is lower rated. So we think that provides for a pretty attractive setup for our credit-oriented hedge funds. And then finally, we think that all this focus on central bank policy action creates a really rich backdrop for macro managers. Just look at the interest rate volatility that we've seen this year and how dramatically the probabilities that were priced in for how much the Fed would cut this year have changed as we've gotten incremental data points with respect to growth and inflation. All that volatility creates so much trading opportunities for our managers. Compare that to, you know, the decade or so post-global financial crisis, when all central bank action was very highly coordinated, we held interest rates at zero, there was, you know, very low volatility, and it was kind of a steady up and to the right market for the most part. There's just so much more going on today that, you know, creates trading opportunities for those managers. So when I look at the way our portfolio is positioned, you know, given those views, I'd say we're pretty close to home base in terms of what, you know, our historical average asset allocation is. Long short equity is the largest allocation. That's partly driven on our positive view of fundamental long short, as I articulated. But it's also, you know, very typical for us because our view is that equity markets are broad and deep. And there's generally, you know, a pretty consistent opportunity set within that space versus, you know, some hedge fund strategies that are just more cyclical by nature, especially like event-driven strategies. You know, there's periods where there's a lot of events to capitalize upon and periods when there are less so. But then when I look across the other three strategies today, the, you know, allocations are pretty evenly divided. And I think, you know, that's reflecting this, you know, feeling that there's a good opportunity across so many different hedge fund styles simultaneously. And that doesn't always happen.
That's great insight. Just focusing on risk for a second, do you have any key concerns or risks that you're monitoring? Thinking, you know, we really haven't been through a full credit cycle in a very, very long time. And maybe that's coming with rates ticking up and perhaps, you know, consumer defaults and other defaults rising. But how do you think about macro risks that could cause a significant change in your market outlook and how you position the portfolio?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest, you know, potential surprise would be like an unanticipated and significant slowdown in economic growth, right? I think, you know, sort of waiting for growth to sort of catch up to the very significant move that we've had in rates, and it just kind of hasn't come as anticipated. So as you mentioned, like, we're very closely monitoring the credit market. Sometimes that's the first place to start to move, you know, and in many ways, you know, we're looking for opportunities to lean in. If you do see credit spreads start to materially widen, or you do start to see a pickup in defaults, that historically has been a very rich opportunity set for hedge funds and our distressed debt managers. So that is, you know, probably the key macro thing that that is top of mind. And then as it relates to hedge funds, I'd say we're monitoring parts of the hedge fund universe that have grown just really rapidly in recent years. So the multi-portfolio manager platforms, pod models, they've grown a ton. And on top of that, they amplify their market impact with very high degrees of leverage. So while we don't have any direct exposure to those strategies, you know, they do in their trading style create a decent amount of volatility, especially in the short term, that other managers need to adapt to and learn how to navigate. And then, you know, we think that, you know, just given their size and the amount of leverage, you know, they could pose some, you know, potential contagion risks if they were to hit a rough patch in terms of performance. And, you know, those managers that are all, you know, pursue very similar styles would be forced to deleverage at the same time. So we want to just make sure that, you know, that's top of mind for our managers and ourselves as we manage the risks in our portfolio.
That's great perspective. Kristen, NSE MAF has a $50,000 minimum investment and some limits on liquidity, so not all investors may be eligible. Understanding this, how do you see a strategy like the North Square Evanston Multi-Alpha Fund being best positioned in the diversified portfolio of an investor?
Yeah, this fund, you know, is really designed to provide a source of returns that's different from and less correlated to traditional long-only investments. So it's designed to protect capital in market sell-offs while still participating and hopefully, you know, to an even larger degree in the market's upside over time. Reducing volatility, we think, and, you know, protecting your downside and market sell-offs matter in practice because it allows an investor to better plan for their spending needs and to really stay the course with their more directional and more volatile investments through bear markets. So for our investors, they're using this portfolio either as just an outright diversifier or as a substitute within their traditional stock and bond portfolios.
Kristen, thank you for joining me today. This has been a great discussion.
Oh, it was my pleasure, Mark. Thank you, and I look forward to talking again soon.
My question.
Thank you for tuning in to our North Square Active Insights podcast. For more information on North Square Investments, our partners, and investment solutions, please visit our website at www.northsquareinvest.com. Nothing contained in this communication constitutes tax, legal, or investment advice. Investors must consult their tax advisor or legal counsel for advice and information concerning their particular situation. This podcast contains certain statements that may include forward-looking statements. Although Evanston Capital believes that the expectations reflected in these forward-looking statements are reasonable, they do involve assumptions, risks, and uncertainties, and these expectations may prove to be incorrect. Actual events could differ materially from those anticipated in these forward-looking statements as a result of a variety of factors. You should not place undue reliance on these forward-looking statements. This podcast reflects Evanston Capital's views and opinions as of the date herein, which are subject to change at any time based on market and other conditions. We disclaim any responsibility to update these views. These views should not be relied on as investment advice or an indication of trading intention.